Hello and welcome to Leaders in Tech and E-commerce podcast. I'm your host, Rashid, and I'm also the Managing Director at Elcode Global, responsible for executive search and consulting business in Asia Pacific and North America. Our mission is to connect the tech in supply chain and e-commerce ecosystem globally by bringing forward some of the interesting stories about success and failures from leaders in the industry. Today, I have founder of Navya, Simon Borg, who started this business in 2003. Simon, welcome.
Thank you. How are you?
Very good. And thanks for doing this with me.
Thanks for inviting me.
You know, before we go more in introduction to, you know, what are you doing and how you started this, one of the articles, you know, I would like to talk about was, I think I read just 3-4 weeks back, and this is why I was really interested to kind of get you in, was your perspective on trends in supply chain and why we should ban the word. Do you mind just giving us a story of, you know, why did you end up writing this article?
It was quite interesting, actually. I got invited to give a lecture to some PhD students at a local university here in Melbourne. And I got asked to talk about trends in supply chain. As I was thinking about it, it just, the word kept actually grating on me, you know, because our business, we've always seen change and evolution as just part of our DNA. So we've constantly looked at processes, we've constantly looked at technology, we've constantly looked at stuff that's developing as just a part of business. So when you think about trend, whenever I heard the word trend, and I'm a consequence of the 80s, so, you know, I'm thinking yo-yos and I'm thinking all this horrible fashion, I'm thinking that's a trend. And now a trend to me, when you define the word trend, it's a very here and now moment. Now, supply chains, by their nature, are built by consistency and evolution. So for me, it's not about trends. It's actually about evolution. Supply chains evolve. If we're not looking at technology, if we're not looking at new processes, if we're not looking at different ways of doing things, then we're not providing a supply chain. So the word trend, in my mind, intrinsically does not match what we're trying to achieve in a supply chain. Hence why I think the word should be banned.
I agree. And I genuinely think this is a very great perspective, because when I was sharing this article internally with our team to kind of say, you know, because we do get a lot of people asking what are the current trends, you know, what are the skills, you know, which is in trends. And I think this is actually far more better perspective. And again, thanks for sharing. Now let's come back to you and Navya. I mean, again, it's a very long journey. So I don't know if you still remember, how did it all happen? How did it all start?
I'm not that old.
You know, so I've interviewed a lot of leaders who kind of founded freight forwarding businesses. Yep. Many of them do not come from this background, but you are a veteran in supply chain. I mean, you know, all your career is all about supply chain.
I founded the business, as you said earlier, in 2003. My initial chosen career was actually being a musician, but I quickly worked out that there wasn't that much money in it, and it was a lot more hard work than it looked to be. So,
For our audience, before this call started, Simon actually showed me his room, which had, I don't know, plenty of guitars. So
there's probably too many guitars.
He's a hard too many musician. Guitars. Sorry, yeah. Go on.
So I still enjoy playing a lot, but my first full-time job was actually, I got a job as a courier in a freight forwarding business. I've sort of got that, I guess I hate saying it, but that typical entrepreneurial background. You know, I fell into the industry, but I quickly fell into an industry that I loved. You know, I loved the fact that you did business globally. I loved the fact that you, one moment, could talk to a truck driver, to talk to a C-level executive, to talk to a warehouse person. All of this diversity, all of these different cultures, all in one day. Yeah, in fact, sometimes all in 2 hours. So I quickly worked out that I loved it. I quickly worked out that I was actually quite good at it as well. And about 4 years after starting my first full-time role, I started as a courier and worked my way up, I founded the company here in Melbourne in 2003. And very much from that moment of founding, we still hold a very strong entrepreneurial spirit all the way through the business. So, you know, I encourage thinking, you know, I encourage lateral thinking. I push people to be, you know, just push themselves to be better constantly. Yeah, so that's sort of my story. You know, no university degree, no anything, very much on the job learning. Although these days there are, you know, I said earlier that, you know, I gave a lecture to some PhD students. There are some amazing, amazing courses now that are educating professionals, which is, I think is great to see. You know, our industry was never the industry that you woke up at high school thinking, I'm going to get into supply chain.
Yeah.
Albeit one thing the pandemic has done, it has brought highlight to that. But now with these, you know, university courses, and not just on international trade, on deep learning in supply chain, it's certainly put focus on getting, you know, a knowledge base into our industry that's going to carry us through to the future, I feel.
Well, no, I think what has happened, first of all, especially with you, I mean, you have been in the industry for so long, you've seen lots of ups and downs, and things have changed. Few things have evolved, but I think more than that, things have changed drastically as well. And again, my perspective is from people who basically have started business quite recently where, you know, there was a boom. I think 2003, I think 2003 was the peak of trucking businesses when a lot of trucking was happening in Australia.
Yep.
Until 2007, I think this boom stayed. So a lot of businesses were registered, but a lot of business in 2015 went off.
Correct.
You still stayed there. Do you remember what was the skills needed that time to be in this business?
I think I dare say this would be quite prevalent globally as well. You know, I think when you go into starting a freight forwarding business, you've got two choices. You can sit and have a couple of customers for a period of time because you've got a relationship, or you could actually build a business as you would. A lot of my success was actually I didn't run my business like a freight forwarder. Yeah, I was a vicarious reader, you know, and I would read about everything but transport companies or everything but freight forwarders. And I would apply a lot of that methodology. You know, very early on, we understood the power of brand. We understood the power of storytelling. We understood the power of scale and how to also compete against scale. Because whilst we're probably classed as medium sized now, we still compete against the big guys. And all of that story and all of that journey that started quite early on. I mean, it wasn't as mature as it is today. You know, sometimes I speak to my exec team and management team. You know, sometimes you feel like we're an overnight success, but it's taken us 20 years to be there. It's taken us 20 years to learn how to run the company, to understand the DNA. But those philosophies, that power of storytelling, that power of brand, that power of service execution, that's been with us since day dot. And we've just carried that and amplified that over a long period of time. And that's why we're here today.
So the services when you started, were they still just like, were you focused on one part of the freight and now you've expanded to everything? What's the service when you started? What's the service now?
Yeah, you know, it's when I started, my blinkers were off. As I've gotten older, I find the more you have your blinkers on and the more focused you are, the quicker you grow. Look, when we started, we're very much just a, you know, call yourself a freight forwarder or a freight brokerage. You know, we didn't pack our own LCL containers. We weren't IATA accredited, so we weren't booking. You know, we were co-loading and all that stuff, much the same as many freight forwarder startups. So we could do, you know, my personal operational expertise was in exports and with a particular focus on air freight. And then we had people working for us. You know, I had a very, very small team at the time, but, you know, they could do imports. But we're always focused on the customer. And as long as you were focused on the customer and you could solve their problems, and ultimately in freight forwarding, I mean, if you work hard enough and you think hard enough, you'll solve their problems. We kept developing customers. So it wasn't so much a focus on what services we could offer. It was just an absolute commitment to the customer. And a lot of people will say the same thing, but, you know, I don't like you using the word fanatical because it's been used in the tech space too long, but we just, the customer leads our way, you know, and that we've just done that and that's worked for us. And then certainly over the journey now, you know, we've got some trades where we would be, you know, top two or top three by volume, and they're very specialized trades, you know. So as I was saying, as I've gotten older, we've worked out that if we focus on an area, we become experts, absolute experts in the area, more so than anyone else. And then we couple it with our technology footprint, and it's just an unbeatable value proposition for our customer.
So two questions on this. One is, Is there a freight area where you're more focused on? Like, is air freight more stronger than sea freight for you, or is rail freight?
Yeah, that's sorry to interrupt, by the way, but
Oh, good.
that so one thing that the pandemic taught us, and we were already on this journey, is specialization. You know, I've got a lot of friends in the industry, and we talk very deeply about this over a glass of wine, usually, about specialization, because the word specialization in the industry, in our industry, has been forgotten. But going into the pandemic, we were already restructuring the business to have experts in, for example, our air freight product manager was an absolute expert in air freight. So we bring these subject matter experts to the table when we're talking to customers. So we'll have our key accounts team, but we have subject matter experts, which then allows us to be quite diverse in the type of service offering we've got and allows us to solve multiple problems for customers over quite a diverse range of challenges. And it certainly allowed us to, I mean, look, everyone grew through pandemic, but we grew shipment numbers, we grew customer numbers, we grew volume numbers because we were able to solve these challenging problems very, very intricately and very effectively at speed.
So the second question I had was around technology. And again, this is in a different perspective, which again, when we were exchanging emails and I got from you, I said, you guys are digital freight forwarding. And I think you came back immediately saying, well, we are actually not a digital freight forwarding. But tell us a little bit about, when somebody goes on your website and you feel, yeah, you guys are really like a technology freight forwarding company. But when I said this digital technology, and you said, no, it's not. So do you mind kind of just sharing your perspective around that as well?
Hopefully I don't cause too many arguments, but my view on technology is it's a must have and a must offer. You know, my view on technology, if you can't walk into a meeting with your customer and provide them with deep dive insight into supply chain very, very simply and very, very effectively, then you're not even in the race. Now, we saw that and we believe that from a very, very early stage. And it's sort of, you know, this whole concept of digital freight forwarder is, you know, it's a term that's been applied to what is effectively a technology startup that then has to learn how to do freight forwarding. And the approach and the investment model is very different than what we've done. We've done our technology investment as just part of what we believe our service offering should be. You know, we have two internal pillars that we believe in. One is our technology. That's a pillar. But the bigger one is actually the people that couple with that technology and this subject matter expertise. So if you couple that together and you provide customers with both of these parts, that's our product offering. So, you know, our investment in technology has been done out of profits, not out of someone else's money. We've built it. We have our own tech team. We continue to develop it and we continue to listen to our customers and also apply our own expertise into this technology platform.
It's amazing perspective, to be honest. One of the question is, when you run the business for so long and you only have one leader, but I think, before I ask this question, I think one thing our audience should know is that how spread Navia is now in this 20 years. So do you mind just telling them, what are the regions you're covering
Yeah,
before
for
I ask
sure.
my question? Yeah.
Yeah, so we were founded in Australia, but we have an office in New Zealand now. We have an office in America, office in Malaysia, and an office in Hungary now. And roughly, I think we have about 300 and something staff across that democracy. Yeah, across the globe.
And when was this happened? When did the shift change from Australia to this global offices?
So first one was New Zealand, maybe, or USA. USA 2017, New Zealand, actually, New Zealand 2017, USA 2018, and then Malaysia and Hungary, actually, at the start of the pandemic. So,
All right.
which was challenging. And that, look, they were led by customer acquisition and needs. And we're certainly looking at, we are certainly contemplating additional offices now. You know, now that we've learned how to do opening offices in other countries, you know, and again, it's this part of maturing as a leader. You know, you're not as gung ho, and you have some battle scars. You know, much the same as you have in life, you have some battle scars. Those scars make you more resilient and give you a deeper understanding on what makes a successful new office. So we've certainly got plans for several new offices over the course of the next 24 months.
Right. And then I'll ask my question now is two things which is quite important for the growth, which you already have kind of shown, is your leadership style and the culture of the company. Do you mind kind of sharing both the points?
Yeah, for sure. I guess, I mean, you speak to a lot of entrepreneurs, and everyone will tell you, and rightly so, that it's about the people you have around you. But I believe it's not just the people you have around you. What I say to my leaders, so to your point earlier, although yes, I'm CEO of the business, we have a very, very strong culture of leadership in the organization, and the senior managers, junior managers, and people coming up through the ranks that spread the load of running the company. I don't ever think one person should run a company. Certainly a person should, I mean, every company needs to be steered. But what I encourage is when I talk to my leadership team, my message to them is that your job is to replace yourself. Your job is to push yourself up into the next role and bring someone up with you. Your job is to make someone better. The moment they come in the door of this organization, they should be better. I don't, it's not just about, the people you have around you. It's actually growing those people around you. And we're fortunate, I've got people that have been with the business close to 20 years. I've got people that have been with the business close to 15 years, and they've all grown. A good story I like to tell is I've got a guy, our technology team actually, on the whole, is large, have largely come out of operations, but they've had an aptitude for, whether it's coding, macros, all sorts of stuff. But one guy came to us, he came on a work visa from the UK. He was a linebacker playing rugby union. Big dude, like massive. Anyway, so he started in my warehouse. Just we do some e-commerce work, so he was just scanning parcels. He was showing an aptitude in tech, and he moved into our tech team. He would be today literally one of the most experienced experts on the CargoWise platform anywhere in the world. The stuff that he gets out of that system, I would contend that not many people are able to do. And he literally came on a sports scholarship to the country and has been promoted. So through the business, what we're constantly looking at, and we always say to people, is don't it, just because you start somewhere, just because there might be a perception of what you're able to achieve. That perception can be broken if you work hard and if you believe in yourself. So we just encourage that. And that's my leadership style. I get the most thrill out of my job when I'm able to sit with someone. Now, I've got a call tomorrow actually with a staff member in America. When I'm able to sit with someone and say, you know what, you listened to what I said and you have now gotten promoted and this is your path. So seeing people come in the door and then truly grow, if I could do that every day and have that experience every day, I would do it every day. I love it.
That's awesome. What's your personal philosophy on, when you are going through this stress times, how are you coping with all those? And this is because one of the questions we are going to start adding to our next podcast is mental health. I'm assuming one of the answer has to be that all this guitar, so where, you're basically your best stress busting is you playing guitar. But how are you
Yes,
coping
yeah.
up while you are at work and you're basically, all
Yeah.
this tough challenges coming every single minute? How are you coping with that? What's your way out?
Yeah, certainly it's been trying over the last 2 years, and I don't think there would be a supply chain person anywhere in the world that said that the last 2 years was simple, or we got through it unscathed, or we didn't add a scar or two, to that life journey. For me, yeah, definitely my music for me is, that's my escape. But I think what we did as a company and what I did as a CEO is I think we went very transparent with the staff. So, we were all in it together, and we very much drove that message home. We were all in it together. Whilst it was tough and challenging and stressful, we still had jobs. We're still putting food on the table. When you put it in absolute perspective on life, and we drove that message home, and we're totally transparent with the staff. That the first month or two of the pandemic was that they were some of the toughest months I've ever had as a leader, business owner, person. No one knew what was going on. But as a leader, you also got to pick yourself up. You don't really have an option to wither. You don't have an option to go and hide or cry in the corner. You've got to pick yourself up because your positivity and your energy will help and carry the business, you know. So I very much told my leaders that this is not a moment where you've got your head down and your shoulders slouched. This is a moment where you put your chest up and your head is held high and you're positive and we get on with the job, because that's a job we're getting paid to do and that's what we're required to do by our customers. And supply chains became very critical for everything, right? Whether it was PPE or sanitizer, all this stuff that everyone needed, we were at the forefront of that. On a deeper level than that, though, we implemented a counseling service for staff as well, so oh, wow. which we offer for free. So, and we still, you know, mental health, you know, I've got several friends that have been touched by mental health issues. So it's definitely a topic that's close to my heart. But yeah, we offer a counseling service for staff, and that, you know, look, we don't know if it gets used. We don't want to know if it gets used. But I do certainly know it has helped certain people through it. And, you know, there were some challenging times it did get used. So I think that's really important for businesses. You know, some people, you know, there's a human side of what we do, you know, and a care for the person pays dividends, in my opinion.
I think,
you know,
so.
The more we invest in our people, and I'm not just talking from education, the more they feel like they are actually, you know, people say, oh, my staff are my assets, but how are they your asset?
Yeah.
What are you actually doing for them to be an asset? Yes, you're earning a profit out of them, but how are you investing them? How are you investing in their well-being? Are you encouraging them to spend more time with their families? You know, you try and, you know, it's very hard in supply chain because the hours are long at the moment, but that's my approach and my philosophy. You know, it's just we're all adults, we're all humans. And, you know, I think if you have some empathy,
no, that's thanks for sharing. And I hope, you know, many of them do listen to this and do kind of buy into the idea of kind of, you know, genuinely taking care of the people you're working with and understanding, you know, just not the business and numbers and just the human element of it. You know, that's many companies are missing it. And I think that's why the attrition in many companies has gone off the charts, right? Because they don't consider them as part of the family. So shifting gears to the business again, what do you think is the biggest hurdle right now you need to cross to, you know, with the expansion you have in mind to, you know, get there where you want to reach?
Yeah, look, I think for us now, we're very much at that stage where talent is a big, I'm not going to say it's a challenge, because obviously everyone's talking about labor markets, but getting, and this is even pre-pandemic, finding the right talent that fit the culture, especially with international expansion. That's something we're very, very focused on. You know, capital goes in there as well, you know, because opening new offices costs money. And you've also got, you know, we've been heavily focused in 3PL business, which is a lot more capital intensive. So capital and people, I would say, are our two biggest, I don't want to say hurdles, but two biggest focuses at the moment.
All right. And where do you see the supply chain moving now with recession just coming, kicking in? I think, do you feel supply chain is slowing down and making the job easier now?
Look, it's, you know, I see it across a couple of different countries now. So I think there's still challenges and there's still things that need to be worked through. You know, people are sitting on more stock. You have to be a lot more on top of, for example, purchase order management is a really big thing now. Certainly things are moving a bit simpler. On most trades, some trades they're still quite chaotic. Where it heads from here, you know, in shipping, I've always said that for example, inflation at the moment. I mean, we've all been witness to high freight rates for a significant amount of time.
Yeah.
That's only so sustainable by large retailers or anyone that's importing or exporting some type of product. It has to be passed on to the consumer. Now, the reality is we're probably a leading indicator of 6 months ago. We already knew this was coming because the freight prices are high. And obviously, we've got oil shock and whatever else is going on at the moment. But now, with the freight prices heading south quickly, I would suggest we're a leading indicator for inflationary pressure easing in the next 6 months. Now, whether that leads to, you know, consumer confidence, yet to be seen. But one thing we all need to remember as well is you know, there's quite a bit of confidence because people are gainfully employed and quite secure in their job. It's still, the labor market is still tight. It is still quite hard to find people in most countries. Therefore, if you've got a job, maybe you're a little bit more confident to spend. Look, I don't think we're going to see pandemic type volumes. Obviously, rates are coming off. Maybe it's a quick dip and a bounce, but maybe I'm wrong as well. I mean, it's hard. It was like the crystal ball that we all wanted to have in the pandemic, and being ahead of, what the next problem was going to be. I think we're sort of there again with the uncertainty, waiting to see what the indicators are going to tell us in maybe 3 or 4 months' time.
But are you an asset heavy business?
Not, no. We don't run, so most of our, we're an asset light business. We certainly run warehouses, and warehouse space is quite difficult to come by in a lot of locations at the moment. So you're very much looking at, waiting 6 to 8 months for any new warehouse space. But otherwise, no, we're an asset light business.
Because I feel that, freight forwarding companies might be safe, with the recession coming in, because what's going to happen is, and again, this is just me talking to, a few hundred people and trying to kind of make my decision around it, is a lot of people are going to start outsourcing it. So rates higher or lower, it doesn't matter, because, you do not incur that rates. You're not losing on assets. You're basically, if it's cheaper, it's good for your kind of clients to kind of get it cheaper. If it's costlier, clients still pays for it. What you do it is basically making sure that deliveries keep getting on time, their product are managed well, and their product are moving, right? So, and I think more freight forward services are going to go up, and I won't be surprised if more freight forwarding companies are getting registered in this year and next year, because that will move way faster than asset heavy businesses.
Oh, for sure. I mean, and that's the beauty of freight forwarding businesses. We've got a footprint, or we've got a playbook of opening offices. We could have an office open once the regulatory stuff is done within 14 days. And that's with the full tech footprint, all the processes, all the automation, all the stuff we use, literally in any country anywhere in the world. So you can certainly capitalize on opportunities faster than most businesses. Look, it's an interesting one. I mean, volumes have certainly grown. People's buyer behaviors have changed. I tend to agree with you. I know there's a lot of doom and gloom out there in the industry, and outside the industry. I don't necessarily think it's going to be a GFC type event, where there was, it was cataclysmic. I think certainly there's a dip. Certainly there's going to be some pain, but I guess it's a type of business. We're a sales focused, solutions focused business. Our job number growth has been, 50, 60% year on year for the past 2 or 3 years. I think we're not going to change that philosophy, and we're not going to change that approach, right? We grew through the GFC, we grew through every downturn, we grew revenue, we grew everything. We're just going to stick to that blueprint. Works for us, might not work for everyone, but certainly works for us.
And do you know, many businesses are turning far more pragmatic with just anticipating, recession coming in, and want to be safe with the fundings. Is there any steps you have personally taken within the business?
It's a discussion we have, the management team and I have all the time. I know there's several businesses that have got, hiring freezes or wage freezes. Look, for us, we need more people. We're hiring, and we're actively hiring in pretty much every country we're in. So if you are looking for a job, please message me. So we're not. No, we've added numbers, and we continue to. I know we've got open jobs in pretty much every location at the moment. Again, crystal ball stuff. Does that change? Does that not? Does having good people at the right time mean something? I think it will, because I do think it'll change quickly. So I will take a long-sighted view, not a short-sighted view on it.
That's a great way to look at it. I genuinely feel, because this is a time where you hire, you'll find a lot of talents whose company has been not taking care of them, and they'll be on lookout, at least.
Correct.
So yeah, coming back to Navya, if you can, I don't know if you're comfortable sharing a story around a success story about a client where you're able to kind of change and bring them real, either monetary gains, or kind of help them sustain the business in a way where they were able to get product from one place to another where they were not able to get it with the other providers.
I suppose over the last years, it's not so much the monetary gains. I think, I heard the term deer in headlights used a lot, and I heard the term unresponsive used a lot. I heard the term, I can't do this used a lot. You know, we won several large contracts actually through the pandemic, purely because we could, and we ingrained that into culture from the outset. It was very much for us. You know, I don't want to whine about the problem. We are paid to solve the problem. That's what we are here to do. And to be honest, good freight forwarders solve problems. This is what we have, you know, this is what we do. So look, we had, I guess two big ones for us. We have a couple of very, very large air freight customers that have very consistent volume flows, but you know, 200-300 ton a month of product coming in and out. You know, I think what we did very effectively is, you know, I use a concept in supply chain of buying time. So we focus our processes very much on areas of the supply chain you can control. And that could be origin process or a destination process, and really getting into minutes and hours. So we did that really effectively on a couple of large volume air freight accounts where, you know, we're able to maintain super, super high KPIs, you know, 97% KPIs all the way through the pandemic, and, you know, 5-day KPIs. So end-to-end 5-day KPIs, 95, 97%. And that was very much around a philosophy we have around this hours and minutes. So buying time where we can. And then very much sea freight, you know, I think air freight was all about process, I found. I mean, you know, obviously we lost all the passenger planes and you had to know what services were there, but once you had them, you had to make sure you locked them in. Sea freight was different. Sea freight was like the good old Wild West days. Sea freight was, when I got into the industry, one of the things I loved about it was almost like being a stockbroker. You'd have a phone plugged to your ear and you'd be juggling and you'd be, you know, have you got space? Have you not? And, you know, but you would find it. So the good freight forwarders would be planted to their phones for 12 hours a day solving problems. And that's what we did, but we did it en masse. So we didn't do it. It wasn't just one person or two people. It was 25 people buying and selling freight space every place we could get it. And because of it, we were just solving so many problems for so many customers. You know, customers had, you know, banked up supply chains, back ordered for 6 months. All of a sudden we were able to come in and go, no, we can give you 10 this week. We can give you 15 this week, because we had literally searched every nook and cranny of every place around where their supply chain was going, and we had the space. So we did that, and yeah, we were successful on, you know, a lot of large, particularly Australia, New Zealand. We won a lot of large retail business actually on the back of it because people couldn't move stuff. So it was good fun. I enjoyed it.
That's amazing. Last question before we end. Is there any technology which you have come across, any company or any technology which you have come across and you really thought it was something which is going to help change the supply chain industry?
Okay. Depends. I have certainly, to answer your question. It depends what sector you're talking about. So if we're focused on, say, the admin side or the freight forwarder side, you know, the non-physical side, I certainly think AI's got a place. You know, we have deployed it in our own business. I'm happy to mention we use Vector. So where we use Vector.io, it's a great product. They are giving me a commission. No, they're not. No, they're not. No, we've actually been partnered with them for quite some time. And we've been experimenting with AI going back to, I think, my CIO and I, 2016 was when we first started to play with it. And this is the first product that works properly.
You know, I might give them a shout to and invite them here just for
Vector's great, yeah. So definitely they're very interesting, and Graham over there's got a great background and a great story to tell. Look, in the physical side, I mean, the automation that's coming through, you know, the robotics, the handling, you know, it's mind-blowing. You know, the flyovers, all of this, that's revolutionary, and it's going to get better with time. You know, whether it leads to a, you know, a completely manless or personless warehouse, yet to be seen. You know, I still think there's different things that a person will do, but I mean, it's certainly I've seen warehouses that are almost completely automated, and their pick rates are incredible. You know, so those two things are big. I still do think there is a place for, you know, obviously IoT and blockchain are still, there's a place, but I see them as part of the toolbox. You know, they're not, you know, there was a big hoopla around blockchain, or as big hoopla around IoT. Both of those are just part of a toolbox that will solve problems. But yeah, probably, yeah, AI and robotics and materials handling are the two areas I would certainly, I've certainly done a lot of reading in those areas.
And on the, just for if you have to reflect back, when you started and knowing what you know now, what will you do differently?
Oh, holy cow. A lot. A lot. Look, again, would you do it differently or would you not? I'm sort of a pragmatic person that the past is the past and the future is written by your actions in the future, not, and it sort of goes back to what I said about, scars or battle scars. If I was to change anything in the past, it would make me a different person today. So for me, I'm happy to leave all the mistakes there. I'm happy to forget about a lot of them as well. And, onwards, upwards, and move forward. And that's very much it.
Awesome. Simon, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate your time. I think our audience are gonna love the perspective you have shared.
Thank you.
And by the way, I need to do one more podcast with you. It's gonna probably be in 2 years, and I'm gonna talk all about sustainability within the business. So
For sure.
we are gonna have this topic, and we're gonna have this podcast one more
Yeah.
time. But again,
Yeah.
thank you so much.
My pleasure, and thank you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For all the show notes and information discussed in the episode, please follow Elcott Global/podcast. Also, if you found this interesting, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or any of the podcast platform. We are looking forward to your feedback. Thank you so much.